Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing, man?
Hey, man. I'm good, bro. How you doing?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Brothers For Real Radio Show. We're coming to you live all the way from all over the place. I'm Leon. I'm in Waynesboro, North Carolina. We got Robert on the line. He's in Fort Washington, Washington, D.C. or somewhere. He'll tell you a little more about that in a little bit. This is the Brothers For Real Radio Show. We come to you every Wednesday. Each and every Wednesday, well, most Wednesdays, live all the way from, like I say, all over the place. We got a brother in Charlotte, Joseph. He's going to be joining us shortly, I understand. And Brother Curtis, he's in Burlington, North Carolina. He'll join us eventually. He's in a meeting tonight. So we'll be in and out with him sometime at some point tonight. But I really just want to say welcome to the Brothers For Real Radio Show. We hope you will call in and join our discussion tonight. We talk about different things. Tonight we want to go into a discussion on Black Lives Matter and who do Black Lives Matter to. Now, personally, I have different opinions on this because I'm looking around and seeing getting confused about whether or not Black Lives Matter to Black folks, and until Black Lives really matter to Black folks, it's not gonna fare too well for us, you know. So we really have to pay attention to what we're doing to ourselves, especially our young people.
Right.
Because our young people are the future, and it doesn't matter what else we do as a people. If our youth are failing, we failed as a people. So we just want to make sure our Black lives are mattering to us. Welcome to the show, Robert. Welcome to the show, Joseph. How are you doing tonight, Robert? Talk to me, man. How things going up your way, man?
Leon, things are jumping up here. I've been pushing this, you know, when you talk about Black Lives Mattering, and we have to look at the totality. Usually we talk about it in the extreme of, you know, police shooting somebody or somebody being killed,
yeah,
but it's more systemic than that. The shooting is usually just a manifestation. That's an extreme example of, but I can get into the I'll get into some of the other nuances later on. But first, from Washington D.C., things are going well here. We had Robert Mueller came before the cameras today. I mean, he kind of repeated what he said before, but people have just more of a confirmation than anything else that Trump was not exonerated, that the report was being mischaracterized by Bill Barr.
Did Mueller say that?
Well, he said it, and yeah, he pretty much confirmed that what you heard from Barr was not exactly what I meant. He didn't say it like that. He just reiterated that this, that there was no exoneration of Trump. He said if we did say that if there were no, if he was, if he did not commit any crime, we would have stated so in the report. He basically said that. And he said indeed the election was compromised and attacked by the Russians. And I mean, he wasn't forceful as I or some others would have liked for him to say. Everybody just wanted the gun to smoke. We want a smoking gun to say, hey, this guy, he did it, lock him up. But once again, it was more like the Warshak test where you look at an ink blot and everybody gets a different interpretation. And, of course, Trump came out immediately and said, hey, I'm exonerated again. And, of course, everybody else is saying, hey, you're guilty. So that's been the talk of the town today. But otherwise, we're trying to reconcile this economy because right now we're in a economy of two cities. We have the 1%ers, of course, are doing very well, and then we have people or everybody else who has to work 3 or 4 jobs to get a decent income, and that, of course, emanates from the laws and some of the policies that are coming out of Washington. So it's just a continuation, but it just lets us know that in the business community, the political community, the spiritual community, education, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, in the worldwide, in the media, the national media, I don't know. I just get confused about people who are struggling. Because like you just said, it's that 1% that's doing very well.
Well, you had the tax. You know, we had that big tax break.
Last
year, and exactly. A lot of the we have, people tout these unemployment figures, which are they're up in the below 4%. But those numbers are misleading. They're very misleading. When you have people working 3 and 4 jobs, everybody's doing an Uber or a Lyft or working at McDonald's just to make ends meet, of course there's going to be low unemployment. Remember, during slavery, we had zero unemployment, and that was nothing to brag about. Everybody was working, but nobody was getting paid. So what we're seeing is a continuation of low pay, hard labor, and of course, the elite continue to get richer. So that is just a continuation of a drama that just has been part and parcel of. It's really part of the fabric of this country. When you live in a capitalist society and you have a government that's really that's being the best government money can buy, I really don't see any relief in sight. I think at some point people may have to just take to the streets.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, man. And like you just said, for all of those who didn't catch the best government that money can buy, these politicians are completely bought out, man. I mean, they are bought completely out. Joseph, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Leon, how you doing tonight?
We're great, man. We're great. Ms. Robert Lewis and I on the phone.
What's up, Joe?
On the show here. We want to hear what you have to say about what's going on in Charlotte, North Carolina, please.
Well, Charlotte is booming. Of course, we have a very, very vibrant economy here. There's a lot of, building, new construction going on. Right now we got about 60 people a day that's coming to Charlotte, and what they're saying, the reason that they are coming to Charlotte, because we do have a very vibrant economy, we have good education system, a lot of entertainment venues, very close to the beaches and to the mountains, so right now there's a lot of going on in Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte is just...
Man, we're closer to the beach than you guys. Why are we not booming?
Because that's Wadesboro. And I kind of use Wadesboro as an example of why everything in Charlotte's so expensive. Because Anson County and Mecklenburg County, they sat on virtually the same amount of land area. And Mecklenburg County has over 1 million people, and Anson County has about 27,000. And so it's just a simple matter of of supply and demand, so naturally things are going to be much higher in Mecklenburg County than in Nelson County. But going back to what Robert was saying about the best government that money can buy, what I have said numerous times, and I posted it on, I wrote an essay and I posted it on the internet. Of course, and I got death threats for saying it. I said, but the Congress, they're just proxies for the wealthy.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what they do. And until the
why would somebody try to kill you for saying that, and everybody knows it's true? That's crazy.
Well, but see, that's the thing that gets you killed: the truth.
That's true.
The thing
that's
true. Killed the truth. And what was really upset the people was when I said that the same mindset that sent poor white boys to fight in the Civil War to be mangled, getting their arms and legs shot off and their eyes blown out to protect the institution of slavery, which most of them did not benefit from. I said that's that same mindset that's driving the political train in the United States now. You got a lot of poor people that are fighting for institutions and fighting for programs and policies that do not benefit them, and they will never benefit from it. And until there's a change there, we will not see a change in the way Washington conducts its business, and definitely will not see a difference in the way business is conducted in these boardrooms. So the poor people, especially poor white people, just have to wake up and you know, come to the realization that the only color that really matters in America is green.
But you know what, Joe? The reason why that becomes such a challenge is because the people that are in power understand that the wage issues, as soon as there's any thought of or reconciling the different races based on economic class, in wage issues are injected. Things like race and religion and sexual preference, just to get them fighting among themselves. And as long as they're fighting among themselves, then the rich can just continue to pick everybody's pocket. And that's just been a formula that has worked since the inception of the country.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's tough, man. It's tough society we're living in here, guys.
Right. You have too many politicians. They focus on the bedroom more than what goes on in these boardrooms. And it seems like bedroom politics is what gets people to going. You know, talking about things like you know, homosexuality and gay rights and abortion. You know, all these things are boardroom, bedroom issues.
But you know what, Joe?
Huh?
There's one of the laws of psychological laws is that the mind cannot occupy two thoughts at once, two emotions at once. And an emotion like fear, love, things like that, that's a stronger emotion than logic. So when you look at the mind and you got people trying to decide whether they're going to eat or whether their kid is sleeping with somebody of the same sex, believe it or not, that thing about the sexual preference is a stronger emotion than actually bread and butter issues like how much taxes I'm paying, how much food I'm going to put on the table. I mean, things like that. These wedge issues are very emotional.
Right.
And so when they inject them strategically in people's thoughts in political campaigns, that should not be a close election ever in this country. It shouldn't be. Because most people, when you strip away these emotional issues, most people are the same. They have the same wants and dreams and aspirations. But the politicians, the ones that have the money, understand that those people, they're more them than they are rich people.
That's right.
That means they would win every election, the rational people. But you have to get them fighting among themselves and create these pockets that are after each other. And that now creates what we call a pluralistic society. Remember, Hitler only won by 35% of the vote because he understood this same formula. he did not win by a majority. He never got over 30-45% of the population in support, votes, or anything else. And we're seeing that same rule book playing out right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's an old game. It's been around for years, and it's always worked. You know, just like any game, say, well, if you're playing a game and you got to play this working, you keep running that play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why move? Why change it when it works?
Why change it when it works? And, you know, it goes back to, one philosopher said, I can't think of his name, but he said that oppressors, they never change. They never change. They are always going to be the same. They're always going to use the same tactics. They're always going to use the same verbiage to get people excited and emotional. They're going to always be the same. They're going to always be greedy. They're never going to change. But the only time any real change occurs, and this has been throughout history, the only time any real change occurs is when the oppressed people change.
Wow. Well, guys, look, we're going to talk about a few things in a minute, but Robert, I think I need to take a quick break. I need to make sure my phone line is going to stay up. I've been having a little trouble on my line. So could we take a quick break and come back in a few seconds?
Yes, sir.
Folks, the number to call in is 215-383-3872. You listen to the Brothers for Real Radio Show with Robert, Leon, and Joseph. We'll be right back. Break it down. We're going to get our folks back in here, man. It's the number to call us for is 215-383-3872. You listen to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We're going to talk about whether or not your black lives matter at some point. And what I want to, the reason I want to talk about this, guys, we're still having this desperate situation with illiteracy plaguing our community. We got some very bright spots in our community, but we need more. It's like either you're good, you know, it's either kids are doing good or they're doing completely bad. There's not much middle ground. And it doesn't seem like anybody's really paying attention to the ones who are really falling off to the side, and they're falling off in droves, if you understand what I'm saying. It's not like a few. It's droves. We're losing droves of youth And the one of the issues that I'm so aware of is that our youth are being pulled away from our families by media, by the media. When I say the media, it's the same old song I sing. It's the when I say the media, I'm talking about the music they listen to, the videos they listen to or they watch. And it's really destroying our kids. And here's a statistic I just want to shoot by you. Because studies actually do show that 85% of all juveniles who come in contact with the juvenile court system are functionally illiterate. Now, if you come to any small town like mine or any in a large town like yours, Joseph and Robert, on court day, you'll see a line wrapped around the building of young black folks. You'd think they were giving away contracts to the NBA. But no, what they're getting ready to do is send them all through some kind of court system, spending all that money. And the sad part is the young people are thinking they're getting over when they come in the courtroom and walk out and can walk out without going to jail. They got hit with fines. Their parents out there paying these fines, and they're getting their records, criminal records. And there's not any winning in it. But somehow they've been convinced that if I can come in here and walk back out, I've won. That's winning to them. And the powers in our community are not paying enough attention to that. So, do our black lives matter? And if so, who in the heck do they matter to?
Well, Leon, I will finish my thought I started a minute ago. And I think this, we have to take this holistic approach because, as I stated earlier, when we speak of Black Lives Mattering, we tend to take it to the extreme of it only matters if you don't kill us, if you don't shoot me to death, that means my life matters. But it reminds me of a death by a thousand paper cuts, or if you ever or boiling a frog. If you put a frog in a boiler and just turn the water up gradually, he won't notice that you're killing him. And that's what's happening in our community when we talk about Black Lives Not Mattering. There's these small steps, these small things that coagulate into one big problem. We see things like redlining and voter suppression and food deserts where you can't get healthy food in certain communities, and just a constant harassment, daily harassment that's causing stress and strife and all kind of problems. Then that manifested itself and people start smoking and drinking. They're going out getting these payday loans. Education, like you said, becomes an issue. So when you put all that together, you find out that there's a systemic problem that can't be simply wished away by telling police to stop shooting us. Of course, that's the extreme, and you definitely got to, that's like, you definitely don't want shooting at you, but there's so many baby steps that have to happen. And when you talk about, when you put your black people on a system of white supremacy and oppression, certain things that happen that when you're constantly bombarded, as you mentioned earlier, by media that's convincing the population that a certain population is unworthy of respect, of rights, and even their lives, then eventually that collective effort will result in an attack, and often fatal attack, on black people. So what we have to do, and what I've tried to do, everybody has to do something. Everybody has to pick their piece up and try to carry this mantle. Mine is to build platforms that we can drown out some of this negativity that's shifting people into this abyss. We have to put more put the microphone, a bigger megaphone, in front of positive people that can steer youth away from some of these vices that are taking them to a slow death, and in some cases, a violent and immediate death.
I see your point. I've been meeting lately with young men and women who are, performing artists, talking to them about the music, trying to figure out which direction they're going in the music. And it's so hard to get young people to understand or to try to put, or to get them to put the effort into building an audience that's not already there for them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? I'm just saying, now they know if they go out here and start cursing and carrying on and talking vile and using that crazy language, they have a radio audience already made up for them. There's people just out
just
there waiting to hear it.
Wait for them.
So my thing is now, and I've been talking to some that are listening, is look, man, start, be a trailblazer. Let's help us build a new culture. I mean, that culture's already done. Challenge yourself. See if you can get people to like your positive message. You know, I know everybody has a positive story in them someplace. So let's work on that. But anyway, that's one of my missions lately, to see if we can get young people, young talented people, and there are a lot of talented young people out there that can help us push a positive message in our community, more positive messages in our community. That's just one way I think we can do it. Like I said, another way, like you just said, get that big megaphone, the megaphone into the powerful hands. Get them to start speaking out more. I think one of the things that our community is missing that is that one voice, one sound. You know, with the big bands. You know, if all of us get a good message, and every time kids turn around, that message is in their faces. Child, you must learn how to read. But if I tell them, they may not hear it again for another lifetime.
Well, you know,
they might not hear it again the next month. Yes, sir.
That megaphone used to be the village. That used to be the community, the neighbor, the school teacher, the principal, the pastor. But now that has been fragmented. And what used to be a collective big megaphone that spoke with one voice is now has been really shattered. And it took a few years to do it. I mean, we came out of slavery. There was one call: get up, let's get up out of this doldrum that we're in. Let's try to become economically viable. There was progress, and then of course we had Rosewood and Black Wall Street, the places that were destroyed. We had Jim Crow. So there's been this foot on the neck of black people forever. But that is not an excuse to say we accept the status quo and that we can't do something about it. I would never, as long as there's breath in my body, accept the fact and sit there and say, look, hey, things are bad, we just need to sit here and take it. No, that means we have to just try that much harder. And so if my way of approaching it is to create a bigger megaphone, help these voices that have positive messages get in and drown out some of the negativity, then hopefully that'll inspire somebody else with an even bigger megaphone or some other way to help pull. But my bottom line is that the answer is not to dwell on the negative, but for us, like what we're doing now, is to find solutions to lift people back up, get these kids in front of the right people, and create avenues. You know, once upon a time, there also used to be community centers. Just think about all the things that have happened over the years that is constantly making it more difficult to do what we need to do to keep these kids on the up and air, on the straight and up. It's like we're fighting against an evil and diabolical force, but that means we have to try that much harder because we have the resources, believe it or not. No matter what anybody tells you, there's enough resources. We saw that with what Robert Johnson did. We just need more Robert Johnson to step up to the plate. You don't have to give a $40 million to graduating students, but you can do something. You can do something. Everybody can do something.
That's right.
Robert Smith. Yeah. So, exactly
Robert
right.
Smith,
we have a couple of, I have a couple of calls on the line. Calls them and call your area code if you want to speak at that time. Please do so. We have a 404 area code on the line. Would you like to join the conversation?
I just wanted to add just a few things, man. I called in when y'all first started the conversation, so I missed the second part of it. But first things first, and don't take this as a backhanded compliment, because I really do mean this. I don't usually hear people with Reverend in front of their name talk like this. So salute to y'all, man, for going to that old radical black tradition that actually, you know, made the church what it was in its heyday, I would say. So, you know, much respect to y'all, because, man, I was shocked when the show started for where the conversation went. But salute to y'all for that. And I guess one thing is we got to get better at explaining things because sometimes we do a bad job. And we need a few more, I don't want to say talking points, but ways to explain things to where they make sense in a way that people can grasp them easily and not to mm-hmm. where, you know, we're using verbiage and we're using conversation that really doesn't relate to most people, or it just doesn't seem like it. So, like, when we're talking about unemployment, you know, we got to let people know, look, after 2 years, the people who've been on the unemployment roll, they come off the books, and you can present a number and make it appear as if unemployment is low, when in reality, no, we're just dealing with basically the fallout from the recession in 2008. So everything
right.
looks good now compared to when the economy was on the floor. And the second point would be when people keep telling folks about GDP, tell them to Google labor share of GDP. 90% of all Americans get a W-2. Most of us are workers. So this idea that people should be looking at the GDP as if that has a reflection on their, you know, bread and butter, as you said earlier, it's insane, man. But I'm loving the conversation. Beautiful work. And to get to the thing with children, the biggest, I guess you could say, battle going forward is going to be mobile devices. People touch their phones over 1,000 times a day, especially kids. Their amount of time on the phone, like, this is way beyond what a television could do, what old media could do, because it's always on them, and they're always connected through different apps that they use, you know, because they're interested in this, interested in that, and they're being marketed to in a way that's so direct because, you know, they know what they're interested in by their searches and by what they choose to download. So I think that's the next frontier of things we have to get a grasp on. How much time is your child spending on the phone? What do they do with their phone? Do you have breaks to where there is no technology within the house and we're just going to talk and relate like normal human beings? Or are we going to be putting out millennials who can't look people in the eye, shake their hand, or get nervous around people because they spent so much time with their device and only their selected friends? So yeah, we got a lot of work to do with that. But salute, man. This is a good show.
Appreciate you, man. What's
your
name, brother?
Nas.
Nas?
Yeah, NAJ.
Appreciate you calling in, man.
Appreciate you, my friend.
Appreciate you,
brother.
Good points, man. We appreciate that. We'll take that backhanded comment anytime, brother.
Hey, Leon.
It's morning.
Yes,
sir, Joe. Them other folks.
like what, you know, Leon and your course, Leon, you know, we had a conversation today. We were talking a lot about, you know, what the churches are doing and what the churches are not doing. And, of course, and what one of the things we said was that we have a lot of people that go to church every Sunday. They go to Sunday school, they go to Bible study, but that's the extent of their Christian activity. When it comes to things like trying to uplift the poor, try to help the oppressed, look after the youth, feed the hungry. I mean, a lot of times the Christian church, or any church for that matter, is just absent. And then we talked about, you know, how everybody professed to be a Christian, but nobody wants to do things what Jesus did. We talked about how people, every year, everybody get all hyped up and they go out and celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King birthday or Dr. Martin Luther King holiday. But at the same time, nobody wants to practice what Dr. Martin Luther King talked about. Only thing we know about Dr. Martin Luther King are the few excerpts from his speeches that we hear on the television or the radio or during Dr. Martin Luther King Day. But we don't ever listen to or get involved in what Dr. Martin Luther King was saying about economics. And until we get a grasp on our economic condition, we're going to be having the same conversation, or somebody else going to be having this conversation 50 years from now.
True that.
And Dr. Martin Luther King, he talked more about economics. So he talked just as much about economics as he did talked about peace and being able to, you know, basic equality. A lot of black folks, we've got the attitude right now just because we can go sit down and eat a hamburger wherever we want to and go to the same bathroom with white people, we have arrived. But we're a long way from that. And black people, they'll get up and they'll talk, they'll go to the Kumbaya and talk about blackness and this, and soon they get a dime in the hand, they go take it straight, they can get it back to another white man.
My goodness.
And they'll walk right past black businesses that can do them just as good a service or better, and they cannot wait to get their money back into the hands of a white man.
That's tough. That's cold. Well, here's another thing we spoke about this morning, Joseph, and that was how somebody on the line knows the details behind why Amos and Andy was taken off TV. Whatever the reason, what is going on TV and in the media now, whatever the stuff you can see on TV now, is just terrible. It is creating a culture of people that just don't. If you listen, every now and then I just have to ask people, do you listen to what your child listens to?
Well,
and
you know,
if you do, why do you continue to allow your child to listen to that? Well, Robert,
you know, Leon,
talk to me, man.
One of the greatest threats facing black America right now is the lack of control of the media. Go back through history and look at any major upheaval or change of government or change of venue or change of lifestyle or culture. It usually was precipitated by controlling the media. When Hitler came to power back in 34 to 39, the first person he brought on was Joseph Goebbels, who was a communication specialist, and because he understood the power of controlling the message. In this country, there are about 2,000 talk shows. Only about 10% of them are actually progressive. Think about that. 90% of the media is in this country. When we talk about politics and things that really bread and butter issues being talked about daily, 90% is controlled by right-wing operatives. We're talking about people like Sinclair Media. We're talking about Fox News, people like that. That is just the part that we can see. But it's also pilfers into things like music, TV. Think about the people who are making these decisions are controlling the minds of the population. That is why when we start seeing things like we start talking about things like Black Lives Mattering, and we only, like I say, talk about the thing when we see somebody shoot a black kid or beat somebody over the head or run somebody out of a store. But these small things that are happening on a daily basis is because the country is being spoon-fed a subtle and sometimes not so subtle message of hate, that black people are inferior, they're not worthy of respect, not even respect worthy of life. And that, when you see kids going out shooting each other, they're shooting other people, they're robbing, they're smoking, they're drinking, they're doing all these bad habits, it's because that message, sometimes it's not a matter of, we have to go back to the Lee Atwater and the Southern Strategy. These guys have a game plan. They're playing long-term strategy, and we're too busy jumping on these big one-off incidents when somebody gets shot that we're overlooking the sleight of hand that's happening every day and right in front of us.
It's crazy, man.
There are a lot of issues that's going on in the black community, just like redlining, for example. Redlining is alive and well. And in October of 2015, the redlining snake reared its ugly head in the state of North Carolina, and I have not heard one soul address it but me. I'm the only person been talking about it. I talked about it to the insurance commissioner. I talked about it to the various marketing representatives. I even talked to it about the NAACP. And one of the marketing reps comes into my office maybe once every quarter, and she has acknowledged that there's plain out redlining that's going on in the insurance in North Carolina. I mean, she was probably going over the state. But anytime you have a system in place where you're draining millions, if not billions, of dollars out of one community and transferred it to another community, you have a large problem. I mean, I even
Joseph, break it down. What's redlining, man?
You know, redlining, that's when, you know, you say, for example, you got one zip code that's predominantly black, and you got another zip code that's predominantly white, and you treat that zip code that's predominantly black with less fairness, so you charge them higher prices, you give them inferior product, you go to buy a car, you pay a higher interest rate, you buy a house, you pay a higher interest rate, you buy insurance, you pay a higher rate just because of the zip code or the area that you live in. That's redlining.
And you know
what?
That's
the justification.
It was actually a literal. That was actually done literally in the old days. These guys
exactly
put a big
right.
board
that's where
up.
The term came from.
And they would actually draw a red line around certain neighborhoods where they would show a high interest rates. We used to see that in retail where certain neighborhoods you couldn't. Your credit card had to have a. You had to show ID. I mean, there's all kinds of little things that they would do. But they would start by actually drawing a red line around certain neighborhoods. It may
that's
not
right.
be an entire zip code. Sometimes it would be block by block.
That's right.
So that's how the term actually got its literal meaning.
Right. But see, the thing is, you know, just like me, for example, I mean, I've been like a voice in the wilderness where nobody hears it. But, you know, but it goes back to one thing. Now, those people up there in Raleigh, as well as all these insurance companies, they can look down there and say, well, Joseph Gatewood ain't got enough customers to really, for anybody to make a lot of fuss about it. Only thing we got to do is boot him out of the insurance business and you know, we keep on conducting business as usual. But I'm not making a commercial, but the reason we don't have a voice is because we don't have the support of our people.
No. That is a problem.
That's
one
of
our issues.
You know, Leon, you were talking about Black Lives Matter. I know this is we've taken this in a more, I guess, global and general context, but that's almost the way you have to look at it. The Black Lives Matter is not only the shooting or the unfair distribution of justice towards young black men. It is part of a bigger and global problem. And that's why you're getting the conversation is being kind of broadened to include things like redlining and voter suppression and some of these other things that happen on a daily basis. The shooting that we see, that's just the manifestation. That's like the what we see, the embodiment of it. But it's going on every day. It's going on in the classroom. It's going on in the retail shops. It's going on at the voting booths. It's happening every day. But we only celebrate or march and protest when we see it come to the surface, and it's right in your face on TV, and they're telling you, hey, another young black guy got shot. We've been shot every day. We've been
that's
shot
right.
in different ways, literally and figuratively.
And that was why I thought it would be a good conversation for us to discuss this, because it has been limited to police shootings, and I know better. I know it's much worse than that. I know Black Lives Matter. Black lives need to matter to black folk before we can even go out here even thinking about trying to convince other people to care about our lives, because our lives must matter to us.
Hey, Leon,
and,
let me put in a business context.
If you're saying,
okay, black lives should matter to other black people. If black lives matter to you, your brother, then you go patronize his chop. You don't walk past his chop to go to somebody else's chop. Don't use that excuse because I got to drive 5 extra miles, I don't have enough gas, or their price is like 2 cents more than the other place. if Black Lives Matter to you, that money is going to trickle down to somebody's kid. It's going to put somebody to work. It's going to have somebody get a better education. It's going to keep them off the streets. So we have to do everyday things to show that Black Lives Matter, not just go out and protest when somebody gets shot. Support these businesses. Support these colleges. Give back to the community. Join, help nonprofits like Holler. That is demonstrating that Black Lives Matter.
I have another call on the line, Robert. Ladies and gentlemen, you're to the Brother for Real Radio Show.
If Black Lives matter to black people, it wouldn't matter whether they matter to anybody else or not. Because we will be strong enough where we can overcome all of these problems that are created from the outside. We need to start letting Black Lives matter to black people.
Wow.
Hallelujah.
True that. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother for Real Radio Show. 215-383-3872 is the number to call. We have another call on the line. We'll give opportunity to speak. 704-294, you're on the line. Would you like to speak?
Hi, I'm sorry. This is Kimberly. Can you hear me?
We hear you. Yes, ma'am. Kimberly Harrington?
Yes.
Hey, Kim. How you doing?
Hey, I just joined the I was on early and I got disconnected and I just rejoined. But I appreciate what Robert just said. To me, that is so profound. If black lives matter, then support black businesses. And I try to make a conscious effort to do that. And I know that there was an app that was once discussed. I think Robert discussed it before. There's an app you can download and you can find where the black businesses are in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But I've gone, whenever I go to a new neighborhood, I used to work in Pageland, South Carolina, and the first thing I asked was, where are the black businesses? Because I wanted to support them. And there were few in that town. Now I'm in Salisbury, North Carolina, and I asked, where are the black businesses? And there are more there, and I try to make an intentional effort to do that, even if it costs me a little bit more, even if I have to drive a little bit further, as he said. But that's a great point, Robert, and I want to repeat that. If black lives matter, then support black schools, support black businesses. A lot of people think they're getting a better education when they go to a PWI versus an HBCU, when before this is all that you had. So just want to say I appreciated that comment. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your compliment, your comment. Thank you very much. I was.
Hey, by the way, the app that I had mentioned, referenced a few, I may have been last year, it's called Official Black Wall Street. It's an app started by a sister. And what I like about it is if you're driving, once you load the app, when you're driving down the street, whenever you come near a black business, it actually pops up on your app. Let you, hey, there's Gatewood Marketing over there, 95. So that's so black people out here doing things that are trying to corral our resources and put us in on the foot, good footing. You know, one thing I talk about, Leon, on my show on Saturdays, this becomes like part of the fabric of the show, is that we have to support our businesses, not just for to put, you know, line our pockets and go out and buy big cars, but we have to put our people to work. Nothing distresses me more than in the summertime when black people load up their kids in their cars and drive them across town to somebody else's community to work because we can't hire our own children. I mean, I understand you can't give somebody a big, you know, six-figure job. But, man, if you can't have your own kids, I mean, what else? That's pretty bad. That's a sad commentary. So I think if we start with these small steps and work our way, but we're not even taking the smallest steps in some cases. So we got a lot of work to do, and that's not to knock the people that are out here struggling. Yeah, we can do something, but if you can't start a business, if you can't go out and hire somebody in a big job, at least the minimum you do is support the ones that do.
That's true.
Everybody can do that.
But everyone can do that. And I always have to go back to my little passion, and that's it. And that is, if Black Lives Matter, if your children matter, we have to start making sure our children are getting education. And the best way to do that, you know, everybody gives the school system a hard time, but everybody's going through these schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to find a way to make sure your kids get pushed to the front of the line in these schools, to the front of the line of the different curriculums and programs that are being offered by these schools, because the worst thing you can do is sit back and start complaining about the school system, and you're not doing anything to push your kids to the front of the line. What actually was the biggest issue is with our kids is they're being allowed to go into classrooms and act up. And once that happens, and once they get labeled, they get pushed to the back of the line. So it's important that we make sure our kids get pushed to the front of the line, like you did, Robert, like you did, Joseph, like Kim's mom did. I mean, like my parents did. You have to make sure when you get in that school system, you tell your kids, go in. You're going in there to learn. And if they're not doing that, you have to make sure they're doing it. You have to show your face at the school system. You have to show your face at the school. Because once you show your face at that school, they realize that that little black boy of yours matters to you. And once they realize that.
Like Kwanjikun Jufu said, he said, by the time that kid is 9 years old, his destiny is already set. And if you haven't pointed him in the right direction by then, it's almost like another lost soul. I mean, it doesn't mean he's totally lost, but it's going to make the job a lot harder. You know, somebody said at the Holler event, Leon, I appreciate the invitation to come down there. And I say this again, mm-hmm. I've repeated it since then. We don't necessarily need a school system or institution to help our kids. And I said it then, I'll say it again. If you want your kid to read, you read, period.
That's right.
If you want a reading kid, read. My daughter was
That's
reading
right.
by the time she was. I think my daughter came out the womb reading because her mother took that step to make sure that she was going to be a reader. Everybody
right.
can do something. We can't keep depending on our oppressors to determine how well we're going to fare. We have so many tools at our disposal that doesn't cost any money. It just takes a little time. It takes some understanding of the challenge and the task that are ahead of us. And take these many small steps instead of just waiting on the big rallies to think that we got to have somebody to tell us what to do.
Right. And it's Black Lives
Matter. And waiting on like
it's... Black Lives Matter, Leon, Robert. If Black Lives Matter, make sure you're taking care of your children, point them in the right direction, making sure that they are reading and that they are taking the proper steps, you know, where they can be productive members of society. If Black Lives Matter, let you remember, you got black. If you black, and chances are your children are black. So make those lives matter more by disciplining them and then teaching them, sending them to school. Don't wait on the school system to try to raise your children. You raise your own children and send them to school to learn.
Wow. You're preaching tonight, Joseph. But check this out, guys. I went to the school today, and the principal told me that one of the kids that we're working with said he has missed 37 days out of school.
Holy.
And he wasn't in school today.
He
I said,
today?
Is he grown, sir?
He's not there today.
No, he wasn't there today either. So I asked the teacher, I said, is he grown? I mean. And she said, no, his mama gives him, signs him out, let him come home. I said, is he sick? He said, no. Well, what do you do about
that? Leon, I take my hat off to you because I know this is every time I hear you tell the story of the Maasai tribe in Nairobi, Kenya, and what about the children? It lets me know that there's hope for us because somebody that actually understands the challenge and has a path to it. My job and everybody else's job would be to try to get more people to get involved with efforts like yours. It's hard to do. I mean, we can control our own household, but once we get outside the house, we still got to worry about that somebody else's kid hitting us over the head. So we just can't take this isolated approach that if I take care of my kid, everything else is going to be all right. No, we have to pool our resources and go out and join groups and contribute to groups and support businesses because what we do outside of our houses is what's going to affect our community and eventually affect us and determine whether or not we're going to have a good neighborhood and our own kids are going to have a safe place to grow up. So this this isolation doesn't work. That's my bottom line.
Well, They got the right one for the job with this holler thing. I tell you that because I've been through all of this. Most of the stuff kids have been through, I've been through it. You know,
amen.
We've been poor.
Poor as church mice.
You know what I mean? I mean, we've been through all that. I've almost wanted to quit school.
Boys, we are son of sharecroppers. If that's not enough, that's all you need to hear right there. Nobody got rich sharing crops.
So when the kids come to me and say it's tough around my house, I said, man, you just gonna have to get over that. I mean, you got to find a way to get over that. You got to live, brother. You have to find a way to live for yourself. You got to get past that. Like
well,
the kids we're talking to today.
And they see that, Leon, that's what they have to hear. That's why it is so important that they can get this information. Sometimes that one little statement, just like you made, can turn somebody's life around. But if they never hear that, if all they hear is that, hey, it's tough, life is tough for me, so that gives me license to go out here and hit somebody over the head, that's what they're going to do. But if somebody just intervenes, so look, hey, it's tough for everybody. You're not the only one having a tough time. It was tough for me, too.
I tell you something I told some boys years ago when I first started insurance business. I was no more than 28 years old myself. I just started insurance business. And, you know, back then, of course, you wore a suit and tie every day. You know, I had on my gray suit and my red power tie and driving a little new Honda.
You driving a new what?
My new Honda.
The new Honda, man.
I know these young black boys, and of course I'm just saying this because, see, this is the same type of mentality that's out here now. I saw them young black boys, and I said, man, what's wrong with y'all sitting around like this? You know, they was in their earlier 20s. Man, there's a man, it's rough out here, you know, can't find no jobs. Ronald Reagan is pressing us down. I said, you worry about Ronald Reagan? I see a young man like you, and you worry about a 70-year-old white man. I am not going to let Ronald Reagan determine my destiny, my future. I plan on being living when Ronald Reagan is dead and gone. And guess what?
You did.
I did.
Ronald Reagan is dead and gone, and you're still here.
And I'm still here. So why would I look back then worry about Ronald Reagan? And the same thing right now, folks running around here worrying about Trump. Trump is going to get away with as much as he can get away with. But at the end of the day, we going to have to take care of each other. That's the end of the day.
Amen.
I don't care who's in that White House. Now, of course, like we all know that they have created all sorts of obstacles out here to try to slow us down and to stop us. But we just got to get over it, like you said, Leon. We got to move forward regardless.
Amen.
Amen to that.
Amen.
Amen to that. Here's how we do it, though, guys. We have to get, you know, in the system some kind of way, you know. And when I say get in the system, you just have to kind of get yourself in it. I mean, somebody's going to have to be in it.
Emergency.
I'm not the guy for that. I'm not the guy for that. But someone has to be in the system.
You got to be in the system, outside.
Have somebody at the table.
That's tough.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. I mean, I tried that. I was on the local school board here, but that wasn't for me. So you get out of there, you come out here and hit the ground. Somebody has to be doing the groundwork. But then some people need to be in the system.
Yeah, we need somebody at every level. I mean, I've heard people say, we don't need politics. We just need businesses. Well, we need businesses too, but you can't have a business if somebody's gonna come and shoot you over, knock you over the head every time you open up the door. So you gotta get into the system and have law enforcement, have the streets paved, pick up the trash. So you need
policies.
Those systems. And so what politics does, it helps us distribute those resources so that they benefit us. We're paying taxes into this system whether we like it or not, and so our money has to be reinvested back into us, and that's where politics come in. So we cannot distance ourselves or remove ourselves from the political aspect. We have to take this holistic approach, and that's why we need troops in every area. We need people on the ground. We need people in the halls of Congress. We need people in the court system. We need people in the schools, in the business community, religious community. They all got to come together. And only then are we going to start seeing some type of movement in a positive direction for us.
Amen to that. Nah is still on the line. Look, brother, we're about out of time. Nah is still on the line. But brother Nah, would you like to say something in closing, man? We can ready to get up out of here, man.
Good conversation, and I think y'all gave a lot of people a lot of things to think about. I know I've thought about a few things that you guys have said. So the main thing is we are actually enough. And I think that's the biggest point, despite all obstacles around. But there has to be a we to get that done. We can't buy into this individualism that's sold to us because, it's a rigged monopoly game. And if you're the late contestant within it, you're going to get scratched. So we definitely have to understand the group as a whole. That's the answer. It's always been the answer.
Right on, brother.
We appreciate you calling in, brother. Kimberly Harrington, would you like to close out with something? We're getting ready to get up out of here. Thank you for calling in tonight. She's gone. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for calling the Brother For Real Radio Show. We're here every Wednesday. You can call in at 215-383-3872 or go to www.brotherforreal.com and listen live via the World Wide Web. God bless you. We'll be talking to you again next Wednesday. Thank you, brothers. Got coming up on your show Friday, brother.
Hey, your buddy Coach Harvey is on the show this Friday.
Get out.
Yes, sir. He's
gonna
be
in the studio.
Yes, sir. Being coach,
right,
hold it down.
I'll make sure I tune in, man. That's great. That's good stuff. Yeah.
We're gonna talk about your personal health and your business health. It's gonna be a health show. A show about health.
Wow. A show about health. Well, I'm going to pass the word, man. Make sure some people tune in because we need to hear that for real.
All right, man. Do that, bro. Get the word out. Just make it a big
thing. People get big around here, man. People get big. Health is a serious issue.
Yeah. It's wellness. Health. Wellness. You can't function. You walk around all raggy, Billy. No, you got to get healthy. Your business got to get healthy. Your mind got to get healthy. Your spirit got to get healthy. Your body has to be healthy. We're going to talk about getting well on Friday.
All right, brother. Well, look, man, I'm going to let you go home, man. I'm going to get on down to Old Michelle, bro. I need a good nap.
Hey, man.
I had to drink some coffee to stay awake long enough to do this show tonight, bro.
Get you some black, strong coffee and head on down the road.
Yes, sir. It's a good show, brother.
Right,
we appreciate it.
Thanks.
Have a good one. Mm-hmm.